Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. We are available on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn each and every Monday with a new episode. This will be episode number 14. We are recording today at Brick and Bones Moonshine Bar on Prescott's famed Whiskey Row, a regular haunt for me and for the microphones here at Mile High Show. I will be sitting with Don Cheek, the motivation, the inspiration, the frontman for the Cheek Tones, who are a staple in the local music scene here in Prescott, Arizona. They are a great live band to watch play, to sit back and listen to, a mix of some Americana, a little bit of country thrown in, and some great tunes and great stories. Don and his crew are great storytellers. And that is evident on their second album they have, or CD, A Second Chance at a First Impression. And that title cut is one of my favorites. I've been listening to it almost nonstop for the past couple of days, preparing to meet with Don. So sit back, enjoy. Remember, we are found at milehighshow.com and also the Mile High Show through everywhere you get your podcasts. Tune in, Stitcher, iTunes, all that, and of course on our website. So sit back and enjoy my chat with Don Cheek of the Cheek Tones. Oh, by the way, the intro music was off of that their latest CD, and also we will close out the show with some music from that disc as well. So stick around. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy my chat with Don Cheek. And I just kind of let it run, just a conversation. First off, I'm here with Don Cheek. Thanks for sitting down with me. I know I've been trying to coordinate to get with you for a while, and I'm glad we were able to sneak in before a show.
Well, me too. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about your time here in Prescott, because you are, I'm meaning this as a compliment. And I'm hoping I'm not. You're like the elder statesman of Prescott music scene.
I know. That's pretty weird to me. I mean, they say there are no second acts, you know, but I don't know. I worked in a day job for decades, like everybody else.
School system, and is that?
Yeah,
did I read that right?
I was a teacher for 20 years, and then I was an IT guy for eight years.
Down in the Phoenix area?
Yeah, in Avondale, my last 16 years I was out there. And but I always played music ever since high school. So music was the hobby, even though some years I was playing a lot and some years not at all. But, you know, I never really had a plan to do this after I got to retire from a job. And so it's... This has all been very strange. It's still, I have to pinch myself and say, what? I'm playing music every weekend?
So. I want to get into your history a little bit. And I did a little quick reading, some Courier articles from the local paper up here. But real quick, just to let folks know right off the bat, cheektones.com is right, where they can reach out and purchase CDs, listen to some clips, find out all your show information.
Right.
And Don Cheek on Facebook as well. You update a lot with
is a Cheek Tones page.
Cheek Tones page on Facebook.
Affiliated with me, so I'll can get to that from my page. Or
I'll pull some links and put them on my website when I launch this. This will be up Monday.
Okay.
And you guys have a big gig down in Phoenix on Tuesday for St. Paddy's
right.
Day, correct?
St. Paddy's Day. It's our fourth year to play for that their St. Paddy's party, and it's huge.
And
it's
what's the club?
It's the Irish Wolfhound, a restaurant and bar, I think is what it's called. Anyway, the Irish Wolfhound, and it's it's out in Surprise on the corner of Litchfield and Bell, but it's a good-sized bar and restaurant anyway, but they fence off the whole parking lot, put up a big stage, bring in big sound, And have music all day, and in I guess till 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and
till the neighbors close them down.
You know what? Well, we're the last outside band. We're on the big stage outside, and they have to shut down at 10, so we play 7 to 10. But it's fun to play there.
And you've been running that. You said 4 years.
This is our fourth year. Yeah, and it's they pay well, and it's a great audience. But what I really love is they have the best corned beef I've ever tasted. Anywhere.
Ulterior motives.
And, you know, I've gotten to know the chef. Last year, he sent me home with a little chunk in a styrofoam box on the theory that I was going to share it with my wife. You know, I just said, well, she never tasted this.
Did it make it up the highway?
I made it home, but I don't think she got very much of it. It was good stuff.
And then you also run an open mic on Thursdays at the Birdcage. How long have you been doing that?
Well, actually, I've been doing open mic. You know what? Before I moved up to Prescott, which I came here in 05, and before I moved here, I think I'd only been to a couple of open mics in my whole life. And I came here, and when this was Coyote Joe's, they were running open mic every Thursday. It was a big deal. It was, at that time, I think it was their biggest night of the week. And Dallas Norman was running that with Dave Whitley or Todd Skaggs at the time. And at some point, whoever it was that was with him quit, and they passed it to me. So that was in 06, I guess, or 07. And I've been doing it ever since with Dallas most of that time. I'm doing it by myself at the Birdcage now a lot of the nights, but he still comes and does it some nights there too. So
now, I had working with local media when I was with the paper, I had covered you guys playing on a couple of things up and down the row here and a couple outdoor deals, but I don't, previous to doing this podcast, if I was out of the house, I was working, and I was out 6-7 nights a week, but right. I was always working, and a job canceled out on me about a year and a half ago on a Thursday, and I had some time to kill, and I stumbled on into the Birdcage, and that's when I first really sat down and talked with you for a few minutes,
took
some photos and stuff, and I was just blown away at the amount of talent that was walking up on that stage. And since then, and coming out recreationally and having some fun, that wasn't a unique night. I was thinking, boy, who would a tour bus with all these pro musicians stumble in? I found, no, that's the normal out here as far as the talent.
There's so much, there's such a musical community here to start with, and so much good, so many good players in Prescott. And I don't know, my idea of open mic before I got associated with it here was that it was the kind of thing real musicians stayed away from. And so I was just surprised at the quality of the people coming to play open mic. The people that would be gigging the next night, they were showing up to do open mic. And it was real players. It wasn't just amateurs. And we get amateurs, too. And people that just, you know, weekend warrior or whatever you want to call them, they're... We get all kinds, but it's just amazing to me how good it is. And there are a lot of good open mics in this town, too. You know, the one I do at the Birdcage, we have our share of regular good players and surprises. And that's really, I think, my favorite thing about open mic is that it's, I don't know, you just never know who's going to show up. There was a new guy this last week, a guy named Dennis, that's... a guy my age, you know, retired and traveling around with his wife in a motorhome, and he shows up with the coolest Martin guitar and some great songs, and he was just checking out the music scene himself, and what a great surprise. He's a good player, a good guy, and hopefully he'll be back. And that's the way those open mics go, though. And surprises go the other way, too. I mean, but, you know, Dallas and I have talked about this. In all the years we've done this, because that's 10 years almost, 9 years that we've been doing this, that I've been doing it, and he's done it longer. We've only had to ask somebody not to play maybe twice and say, hey, you know what? You need to go practice some more. But that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I was just blown away at the level of talent. It was amazing. And like I said, I popped through a couple of times since and just wandering different places up and down the row here. And that is, it wasn't a unique night. It was, that's the level of talent that's out here. Guys playing on the courthouse, just on the sidewalk.
I know some of the guys that play out there. Some are, it's not just guys, but
guys and gals. Yeah,
yeah. I know some of those. In fact, I wrote an article about one of them, Banjo Dave. A lot of people know him. He's not doing it anymore, I guess. He would spend his summers up here busking all summer long. He put his kid through school doing that.
Wow.
And he has a house in Naco, I think, down south. And he would spend winters down there and come back. But I don't think he's doing it anymore. But anyway, I wrote an article about him for the old Pop Rocket, if you remember that paper. And so I tried busking myself for that article. It ended up being a two-part article because the second half was me writing about what that was like, because I haven't done that very much.
Now, are you still writing? Are you doing some stuff for Kudos?
Yeah, once in a while. I'm not as... I was writing every month for the Pop Rocket when it was around, and but I'm not doing it as often now. It's kind of like having a term paper due in school, you know? I think, oh, God, I got to have something written by Monday.
And, the deadline.
And, you know, I'm very good at procrastination. So.
Yeah. I've kind of got that too. If I had an art form, I think procrastination's about where my strong suit as well.
Yeah.
Now you said you got up this way in 05 after you retired from the school from the school system.
Right.
Did you just get right into playing more and more then, or did you ease into it?
Well, here's what I did. I July 1st was the day I quit working, and you know, we moved up here. We already had the house here. We moved up. My wife Jane and I did, and she had already been here for a year actually. But in about October of 05, I started thinking, well, you know, I kind of dug in, got all the boxes opened and emptied, and I was thinking I really ought to be checking out a little bit of the local music. I wasn't even going out listening to music or anything, I guess, and so I got the Yellow Pages out, actually got a phone book, and looked up bars and taverns, and I went down the list calling them to see who had open mic. And Coyote Joe's was pretty high up on that list, and they said, oh, yeah, we have open mic every Thursday. And so I decided, on a Wednesday night, I came down here to see what the place looked like, because planning to come back on Thursday. And there was somebody playing here, a couple of great players, actually, Melanie Devaney. She had a different name, Melanie Sue Mauser, she went by then. Songwriter, great singer and player. And she and another guy were here playing that night. There were about three people in here. And I came back the next night and witnessed that amazing open mic. And so then, you know, I came back the next week and played, and I started coming every week to play and get my slot and play my 20 minutes and got to know a lot of musicians around here, and that's how I ended up. Actually, what happened is they offered me, the guy that was doing Sunday nights here at Coyote Joe's quit, or I think they fired him, actually, and they asked me if I wanted to take over Sunday nights. And you know what? I don't think I had ever played a solo gig in my life. I'd always been a drummer in a band. I started as a drummer. And I said, sure, I'll do that. And the pay was $30 a night and a $20 bar tab. Big money, you know, and I did that for almost a year.
Yeah.
And around the time I'd done that a year is when they offered me to do open mic with Dallas, and they gave me Saturday night then, too, and that's when the Cheektones started.
Because
by that time,
like
Marty
06-ish?
Was... that would have been February... Our first gig, official gig, was February 3rd of 07. And Marty had been playing a little bit with me on my solo gig, just to learn the tunes, and so Gary Euchre played drums. So he said, I think I could add some drums to that, and so then we were a trio for a couple of gigs.
Yeah.
And pretty quick we added guitar and or violin, Ennis Vitrols on the violin.
That violin really sets a tone for you guys. It just really sets you apart. It's dynamite. I love it.
You don't run into many bands like ours with a violin in them. Yeah, it's true.
I want to get back to the Cheektones, but let's talk. We'll backtrack a little bit. Uh-huh. You got up here in 05 after you retired. Why Prescott? Well, you said you already had a house up here, but...
Well, when I knew I was going to be retiring, you know, for a couple of years, and I had sold my house in Tempe, and I already had the house where I was living in Litchfield. So I had a little bit of money, and we got to thinking, well, we should maybe think about where we're going to go when we retire, because we don't have to stay in the valley. Why would you if that's not where you work? And And so we just looked around the state, but I had history here. As a kid, I came up here every summer for, I think, 7 or 8 years. Because my dad was a wrangler, horse wrangler at a summer camp, Skyway Camp.
Albert Red Cheek, I read it correctly. Yeah. And he played guitar as well, right?
He was a storyteller and a singer. He even wrote a song or two. He wasn't a great songwriter, but because mostly he would rip off melodies and change the words. But he was a great performer, and that's what, I mean, after World War II, he was playing with Hank Thompson a little bit, and I'm figuring Hank didn't keep him around because he didn't really need another front man, because my dad was a side man. He was, he was big personality.
He was the entertainer.
But he would play at those campfire programs at Skyway Camp, and so I heard him and watched him perform. And
what years was this? What?
That was in the 50s when I was a kid.
Up here?
And the 60s. Yeah.
What was Prescott like back then?
Well, you know what? There was music every night of the week in the bars. The row was full of music. My dad would come into town on a Saturday night, and Bob Cox would get him up to play a couple of songs at the Palace. And I went in the Palace with him a few times, but mostly he didn't want kids around when he was going out to party like that. And So I wasn't in there a whole lot of times, but that was in the probably 60, 61, 60. My last summer up here was 63, I believe. And then they let me stay at home alone one summer. The family came up here, and in summer of 64, I got to stay down there.
Down there being?
In the valley, in Peoria, yeah.
Peoria, and that's where you were born and raised?
Well, I was
pretty
born
much.
In Phoenix, but we lived in small towns around Arizona, so... But that's where I went to high school, and of course, getting to stay by yourself as a teenager for the summer, you can imagine the trouble you
can
get into.
Find a little trouble.
So I had spent a lot of time. Every year, we would ride our horses in the parade for the rodeo parade.
Yeah.
And one year, I was dressed up as an Indian and rode around in the rodeo in a clown act. He was supposed to shoot us off of our horses, so we were riding bareback with paint on our faces and. And the clown, this drunken clown, shot us off our horses. My dad said, when you get shot off your horse, don't let go of the reins, or you're going to have to go catch your horse and walk him out of the arena. So I remembered that, and I held on to the reins, even though I was supposed to be dead. And when the act was over, I just jumped up and swung back up on him and rode out of there. I still remember that.
It's right out of Junior Bonner.
Yeah, it was... It was good times back in those days. Much smaller town. There were parking meters on Whiskey Row. I remember I used to walk down Whiskey Row jumping over the parking meters and listening to the music coming out of the bars. It was a lot more country music at that time. And in fact, I came up here in 75 and sat in. There's a drummer used to be here named Dave Gibson. He died a couple of years ago, and he asked me to fill in for him for a couple of weeks, and his drums had been in Matt's for 2 years without being moved because they were the house band. And back in those days, they didn't bring in different bands every night or even every week. So I came up, played on his drums for 2 weeks, and I don't even remember the name of the band I was with, but it was a great 2 weeks, and it was nice to come back to Prescott at that time, 10 years after I had stopped coming, you know. So I had lots of history here, and we looked around the whole state trying to decide where we wanted to go, and Prescott just seemed to have everything we wanted.
Yeah, like coming home again.
It was for me, and I have friends that were here, of course, too.
When did you start drumming? Was that a teenage band? Were you in some high school bands?
I bought a drum set, I guess my junior, sophomore year of high school, somewhere in there, really crappy drum set that I finally... I was a dishwasher for $1 an hour, and I saved up $300 and bought a Ludwig Blue Sparkle drum
set.
That's
a lot of dishes, man.
That's a lot of dishes. and a lot of nights of going home smelling like food, you know? And I hate smelling like food.
Yeah.
But it happens. We play the Raven. I go home smelling like food, you know?
Yeah.
They cook there, so it happens. But anyway... I started playing drums. Actually, my parents bought me a snare drum when I was in eighth grade, and it's just a snare drum and a pair of sticks, and I don't know what you do with that, especially without anybody showing you what to do. So that didn't get me very far, but I bought my own drums.
I don't know. I've seen you play a case. I've seen you play a bongo. I'm betting you tore up that snare drum pretty good.
Well, I made a lot of racket on it. It was my brother, actually. One day, before I even had a license, we were driving somewhere, my older brother, Danny, and I was pounding the dashboard along with the whatever was on the radio, and it was probably really sounding unpleasant to him or to anybody else, but he said, why don't you get you some drums and stop pounding on things? And and so I did. That's when I bought that first drum set. And so my senior years of high school, I played in a band with three other guys. They were freshmen. And one of them I still play with. He fills in on bass with us when Marty Love can't make it. Claude Lopez is his name.
Yeah.
From Peoria High School. He was guitar at the beginning in that band. And I was the drummer. And
Was that your first band?
Yeah.
What were you guys playing?
It was almost all Beatles to start with. We were good at the harmonies. There were four singers, and we were good at figuring out harmony parts, and the Beatles is what we were all growing up on anyway. So, little by little, we added other stuff. I think my first song to sing while I was playing drums in that band was Gloria, Van Morrison.
Staple. Staple of high school bands across the country.
What fun that was. But it was a new song then.
Yeah.
And I loved singing it and went on to sing other parts. And
what were some of the first, when did you first start writing your own? When were you doing your own originals?
Well, that's interesting because I always wanted to be a songwriter and I had friends that wrote songs, but I didn't really have a handle on how you do that. I don't know if I didn't have the idea or... I don't know. So I just played other people's music through all the way up until I was in my 40s, I guess. And one night, my wife was going to bed early for some reason, a Friday night. She said, I'm going to bed. And I said, oh, I think I'll stay up and write a song. And I don't even know why I said that, because I'd never written a song. I didn't even have an idea for a song.
Yeah.
But she went to bed and I stayed up, so I went in the music room, which was another bedroom in the house, and I thought, well, damn, I got to write a song now. And so I ended up writing a song that I still play. It's called Portales. Yes. It's about the town of New Mexico, about meeting a woman.
I'm going to slide a little closer to you just so I can hear you a little bit.
It's about meeting a woman in a town in the town of Portales, New Mexico, which I'd never been to. And
why'd you pick it? Did you just like the melody of the name? Or?
Well, I was taking classes for my master's degree at ASU, and there was a guy that we were both in computer classes, and we were spending a lot of time in the lab there working on stuff. And he was from New Mexico. He was just there for the summer to go to school, and he said he had been teaching in Portales, so he was always talking about when he was up in Portales, and he said it kind of funny, Portales, and this guy wore a bandana around his head too all the time, and I put both of those elements in the song. The woman has a bandana around her head, and we're in Portales for a convention, I don't know, just came out, but I finished it that night, or wrote the chorus the next day, I guess, and recorded it a few weeks later with Claude Lopez, my friend, but that kind of broke the dam loose or something, and because I wrote one of the songs on our new CD, I wrote pretty quickly after that, a song called Blind Spot, and I've been writing ever since. I don't write a lot. Like, some guys write a song a day or a song every week. I'm lucky if I get a couple a year, but I take my time with them, I guess.
Do you view your songwriting as like an author would in fiction, or do you try and work in biographical things in there, or is it a mixture?
It's a mixture, because it's funny that the first one that I wrote was totally imagined, totally made up, because, you know, that's what you'd think a more accomplished songwriter would be doing, you know? Seems to me the default way to write songs is to write about what's happening to you first. And
write what you know.
And that song Blind Spot was actually about a friend of mine who came home from work one day, and his wife had moved out and had taken the kid, the record collection, and the money out of the bank, and had moved in with his she had moved in with her boyfriend, a guy she'd been seeing for 6 months. And when he told me this, he says, "Man, I didn't even know she was unhappy." And I was thinking, I didn't say it at the time, but I was thinking, man, men must have a blind spot, because I've heard that story so often. And I thought, that could be a song about him. And so he's the subject of that song. And I still know that guy.
Now, you have two releases. First was an EP. Is that right? Just two?
Two records, yeah.
The first was the EP Razorburn,
right.
Correct? I was listening to that. You got that on cheektones.com. You got the cuts
right,
on there.
Right, you can order the CD there. But we haven't gotten the website set up to yet. In fact, our website has to be rebuilt totally. It's on an old platform. The guy that does it for me said, we got to get it off there, just start over. And so we're not doing anything else to that website to fix it.
It's a great spot to listen to some clips, though. So
you can stream that first one or order it. And basically, if you order it there, I get an email that says, send it to this address.
And when did you guys cut that?
That was it was released in December of 08. It took us about a year of working little here and little here and a little there. And we did that one in Marty Love's garage because he had a whole setup recording studio. This one, the second one, so that one was released in 08, and it's called Razorburn.
Now, who was have the Cheektones stayed pretty constant as far as members since then? You went through who's in the band, if you can do that again.
Yeah, just the four guys that have been the same since the beginning are Marty Love on bass, Gary Ukura on drums, and Ennis Vitwals on violin. And the first guitar player that was with us was in a band with Marty, another band, Carnuba. His name was Jimmy Hayes. And then at some point Jimmy quit, right after that CD release, in fact. He quit, and Kenny James came on board and played guitar for a couple of years. Until
Kenny, another staple in this area, in every club up and down the road.
Well, and he added a harmony part, too. He added another voice, and that was what I was really looking for. So that was really good fortune for us, because now we got three voices going, and we got his unique taste in guitar playing. And he's a very tasty player. And he's such a pro and so good at sound and so good at all those aspects of it, arrangement, everything. He's just a musician's musician. But he was starting up Filibuster at the time, and at some point that got going a lot, and Brian Moss had come to town, has his own band, Spafford, now. So he joined us as Kenny played less and less. Brian came on more and more, and at some point he officially became the guitar player. And yet he still had to miss a lot of gigs because Spafford was getting booked a lot. So we were juggling Kenny and Brian for a while, and Rick Kukuza would come and fill in also during that time. And at some point, Drew Hall started filling in when somebody else couldn't make it. So I was juggling three or four lead guitar players for a while there.
And that's Drew that's behind us, right?
That's Drew.
That came in a few minutes
ago. That's Drew, yeah. And at some point, you know, he'd been with Big Daddy D and the Dynamites for a long time, and he just said, well, you know, one day I just said, man, I was just talking to myself, really. I said, you know, this juggling guitar players is such a hassle. I got to get my own guitar player here for the band. And Drew heard me say that, and he came to me and said, well, you know, let me think about that a little. And so after a couple of weeks of pondering that, he decided to come on board full time, and that, you know, that really kicked us up, because he's just like the easiest guy in the world to work with. He's such a great player and good at arranging music and good singer. That's the amazing thing. I guess I'm the lead singer. I sing most of the night, but you know, Gary and Drew are both lead singers. They either one of them could be the lead singer, and I could be the side guy too, you know. So we're really lucky to have three strong voices. And And so we pretty much pick songs that have good harmony opportunities nowadays.
What's your mix in your live show between originals and covers?
Oh, God, it just really depends.
Depends on the night? Or
some places are way more tolerant of originals. As you know, some clubs, there are bar owners that will tell you. The worst phrase I can hear coming out of a band's mouth is going to play a song I wrote, you know? And some of them, they want to hear stuff they know.
Yeah.
But we are so fortunate here. We've played our originals so much here in Prescott because nobody complains here.
Yeah,
and
no.
About
and you've
us
got
playing
such
originals.
A strong following.
And that's the stuff they know now. I mean, I look out in the crowd, and they're singing our songs
yeah.
with us. And so even if there's somebody there for the first time and doesn't know them, they're looking around seeing that that everybody yeah. knows the song. There must be something to it.
And even the covers, you really make them your own. You did The Doors, Roadhouse last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved it. Roadhouse yeah. Blues. It's just your guys' take on it.
It doesn't sound like anybody's
it
version.
It was fantastic. And then with the violin in it and everything, it was yeah. great.
Tonight we're going to do... Long Time Gone, and if everything, of course, I write a set list, but I never know for yeah. sure if we're going to yeah. follow it. But I'm starting the second set tonight with Long Time Gone, the David Crosby song,
yeah.
and we do our own version of that. It's nothing, well, it's a little like them. You
yeah.
you can definitely recognize it, but you wouldn't think it's the same yeah. arrangement for sure.
Talk a little bit about the creation of and the release of your next CD.
Well, we were so slow in getting around to it. We had there was no shortage of songs because I had songs from before that I'd written, like Blind Spot, and yeah. then I was writing new stuff that we were playing. But just finding the time to get us all in the studio, I knew it was going to take a long time, and you know, a lot of hours, and it's going to take some money too.
Yeah,
I wanted to get into a studio this time, and Marty was real gracious to do all that work and recording with his stuff, but getting in a real studio was going to, and with a real engineer that's, you know, got the time to do it. So we finally decided, bite the bullet, let's get started on it. And that was in November of 2013. And we thought we might be ready by summer. Well, we weren't. We weren't ready till February of this year. February 6th was a CD release party. Because we got the basic tracks done pretty quick, but then we had a lot of overdubs, and then mixing took a long time. And scheduling got to be a problem.
Where did you guys record?
Heavenly Studios. It's over on Sheldon, right off Miller
Right
Valley
here in
Road,
town.
Right here in Prescott. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great studio, and he's got isolation in there, meaning that you can get your four or five instruments isolated from each other, so they're on their own tracks in case you need to redo one.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have bleed over from the other instruments. And it's a real handy thing to have, because then you can record, you can play everything at once,
yeah.
like you're playing live, but you're isolated, so... And we ended up redoing almost everything except the drums.
Yeah.
We kept a few basic tracks, but there were things we wanted to redo or different sounds to get.
No, we haven't mentioned it yet. Name of the CD?
Right. The name of it is Second Chance at a First Impression. It's our second album, and so it is a second chance at a first impression. It's been so long, they may have forgotten Razorburn.
And that title cut, I picked up the CD. I've heard you guys play those tunes live. I picked up the CD last night, and it has been running in my dashboard constant since. And then I want to say seven. Number seven is the title track,
well,
I think.
Well, seven is Opposites. Track seven is a song called Opposites, but... But there's a line in that song, Second Chance at a
Did
First Impression.
Did I get
impression.
It wrong? Okay.
No, that's...
I haven't been looking at the cage. I've been listening to it.
Oh, yeah, the title comes from that song.
Okay.
In fact, the other title I had in my head, Hard Night, Soft Landing, is also from that song.
Now, I was reading through on your website and pulling up a couple of articles and things. I love storytellers in music, short stories, in my photography. I try and do that. One of my favorite songwriters, performers ever is Tom Waits. And I saw on the website Jackson Browne, Dylan, and Tom Waits.
Yeah, I think we do one Tom Waits song.
Would you, hold on.
Ice Cream Man.
Okay. Ice Cream. Okay.
Yeah.
I love
You know, it's weird, because that came out in 73, I think.
Was that on Closing Time?
I think so.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, somebody got me that record right off the bat. I think it was a Christmas present. And, you know, the whole album blew me away. And I had a piano at the time. And so I kept learning Tom Waits' song. I wasn't writing my own, as you recall. And so at least I had good stuff to learn. And I learned Ice Cream Man right away. So I've played that song since 73 on piano. And it was just a couple of years ago I thought, damn, I wonder if I could put that on guitar so I could at least, because I don't carry a piano around with me much. And so I put a capo on, put it in the key I needed, and it worked great. And at some point, I think most of our songs, you know, this is terrible to admit, but we just almost never rehearse. I mean, once we started the CD, we didn't have any rehearsal, because if we were getting together, it was in the studio, not to go practice our live show. Most of the songs, if I'm singing them, I learn the song first. I come to the show. If it's a complicated progression, I'll write a chord chart for Marty on bass, you know, because he needs to know where it's going. And he stands behind me at most shows, so he can't see my hand to see what chords I'm playing. And I'm sure Ice Cream Man, that's one that happened that way. I just came in and said, hey, let's see if we can play this. And we learn songs in soundcheck. Almost every week, we learn another song in soundcheck. So.
Now, that track 7, what's it called again?
Opposites.
Opposites. Is that your...
Right,
your
I wrote all the songs on the record except the 8th track. The last song is Lover of the Bayou.
I can't even read my own writing. But one of the lines on there just really jumped out at me, and I'm probably going to butcher it. She's smooth, but her mind... How does that go? Tell me.
I'd have to go through a little of it. I saw a short skirt. She was... Okay, here it goes. She was young and smooth, but her mind was kind of wrinkled.
She got heavy
when I tried to keep it light.
I think I know her. Where did the inspiration for that song come from?
Actually, the start of that song was... I walked in one night, and after a gig, or after, no, nah, I think it might have been after a hard day's work, actually, a long time ago, and I came in and I said, it's been a hard night, I need a soft landing.
I love that line as well.
That just popped out of my head, and I said, that's what really amazes me, is when something like that comes out, you don't know where it comes from, and you got to be observant, you got to be listening to, not just everybody else, but to yourself, because when something good like that comes out, you want to write it down. Because if I hadn't written that down in a notebook that I keep, I would have forgotten that. I mean, and it would have been gone. I would have never got it back.
Yeah.
But I had it in a notebook, and then I remember, I got the idea of a song called Opposites. So it would just be a bunch of opposites, and yet tell a story. And then I remembered my dad telling me when we lived down in southern Arizona that he saw the Northern Lights one night. Well, it was probably some jet at Vandenberg Air Force Base. But he said, I saw the Northern Lights. And I'm thinking, you can't see the Northern Lights in southern Arizona. And I remembered that somehow and wrote that next to that other thing. And so I had the beginning of that song.
And then the opposite of that was, I saw the Southern Cross from northern Arizona.
Right, I changed that on the last verse. Made it the Southern Cross of North. I'm in northern Arizona.
I fell in love with that tune. It's been playing over and over, it blew me away when I was. It just puts such a picture in your mind. I kind of do this with, and most of the time I'm way off base. Once I read something about what actually inspired a song, but listening to that one, I just picturing some windy road off in the desert, some back road in the middle of the night with the stars up. Man, it just blew me away.
Well, that is good. That's really awesome. And I wrote it as a... I actually sent that song to Jorma Kalkanen. Jorma Kalkanen, the guitar player from Jefferson Airplane. He's a great fingerstyle blues player. And I've been to his camp in southern Ohio, a guitar camp. I've been there a couple times. And I have his email and once in a while. And And I wrote that as more of a fingerstyle blues song. And what's interesting is that when I started playing that for the band that way, we played it as a shuffle for a while, and I wasn't liking it. And you can only play so many shuffles in a night anyway. So I played it with the guys one day when we actually did have a rehearsal, and Gary and Marty came up with a different rhythm. Marty came up with that cool bass thing, and the next thing you know, we've got a totally different song. And Drew said, well, it's got the same progression as some flamenco number. And the next thing you know, he's doing licks that are flamenco-style licks.
Yeah.
In fact, we even brought in Anton Teschner to play flamenco guitar on the record. And you can hear that real well. It ended up being a long song because there were so many things we wanted to have in there, and there's a lot of verses to it. So.
And I might be reading more into this, but your roots as a drummer seem to come through in a lot of your songs, and especially in your live show with you pulling up some percussion, some maracas and things like that through there, and it really just adds much to songs, man.
I think it colors the way I play guitar, in fact, because being a drummer, you know, the movement of a song is, you know, that's what that's all about, and I did that so long and so many years that I think my strum is kind of like that.
Yeah.
One night I was talking to Drew when we were going to have somebody missing. Maybe Gary couldn't make it. I would say, well, I could go to drums for the night. And Drew says, are you kidding? Your strum has to be there. Your strum sets the tone for those songs. And so it's kind of funny. I hadn't really thought of it as like that. But I guess it is. It's kind of a characteristic of our music, too.
We're going to have to wrap up here because that was Gary. If we can hear him getting ready on the drums there, and I know you were took some time to sit with me before taking the stage tonight. But really quick before we break, talk a little bit about the fan base here in Prescott and the crowds, because we see some of the same faces at shows wherever you play. They really get into it. I posted something last night. You guys were the only ones sitting. The entire crowd out here on the patio was dancing.
I saw that.
They
photo.
Really get into it. What can you tell me about the fan base for you guys and then live music in general here in Prescott?
Well, you know, it's a little bit hit and miss, especially in the winter, as in general. You know, if you and I think it's, I don't know, I wrote an article for the Kudos last year about I was trying to get at how it had changed from live music every night with all the bars full to what it is now, where they barely have Friday and Saturday in all the bars, you know, live music on Friday and Saturday. And I was trying to get at what had happened and what the demographic change was that produced that. But I don't know. I didn't really get to the crux of it. But I know there are not as many fans to go around as there used to be, music fans. And so all the places with music are kind of dividing them up in a night.
Yeah.
And I just feel very fortunate that we've developed. I mean, 6 years as being the Saturday night band at Coyote Joe's didn't hurt, because everybody knew where we were going to be. They knew what was going on. They knew they liked the place. And they had a great happy hour back in those days.
Yeah.
And so we developed a loyal following there. And I just can't tell you how great that is to know. There are people that know our songs and know us, and they know what to expect, and they just show up night after night, and you'd start to question their taste or their judgment, you know, when they come and hear the same songs again and again. But you know, I think even though it's the same song, it's never the same thing, because most songs we play different from one time to the next. But it's just been amazing. And we don't have a fan base anywhere else. I mean, we have a small one at the Irish Wolfhound where we're going to be Tuesday. We've been playing there 4 or 5 years now, and we've developed some following there. And, of course, the Spirit Room in Jerome is one of our favorite places to play because they know us there. And Prescott people will come to hear us there, as well as the locals and tourists that are in town. Our last gig at the Spirit Room was just an incredible Sunday afternoon. It was just 2 weeks ago. Just blew us all away. And just the appreciation they show, and I don't know, there's nothing like it. And it's the reason for doing this. They're never going to pay you enough to make it like a job, you know. Yeah. Yeah, if you were doing it to make money, you might as well go get a real job because you'll make more that way.
Yeah.
But you won't get the appreciation that we get and the love and support and, oh man, it's just like I say, it blows us away.
One of the highlights of watching you guys play is you coming out off the stage and playing through the crowd, through the dance floor. Yeah. Is that something you've always done?
No. Claude gave me, he had a wireless system that he gave me for Christmas one year. He wasn't using it. He decided, well, I'll give it. And I'd never been wireless before, and that allows you to go out.
Yeah.
In fact, I just bought a new one, and Drew is going to use my other one tonight, so we're both going to be wireless tonight.
Nice.
We're both going to be walking around.
And you have a little bit of a change in personnel tonight. You got a saxophone player coming in?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Well, Ennis has been taking some time off, the violinist. You know,
yes.
He's been taking a few nights off. He's a single parent, and, well, maybe he's not exactly single parent now, but it's complicated, I guess.
I had a little chat with him out on the sidewalk last night, and it sounds like he's got about 3 full-time jobs going.
So when he takes a night off, we try to get Anton to come in and play sax for us. And Anton is the flamenco player that's on opposites on the record, but he's a great sax player too. And he was a sax player for Sweet Nasty. He was one of their founding
members.
Now,
is that who plays with Drew? He's going to play with Drew tomorrow?
He's also a duo with Drew.
Okay.
They both play flamenco-style songs, and they're here tomorrow at Brick and Bones in Sunday afternoon. Which will be yesterday when this airs, won't it?
Yesterday.
Okay. They were here yesterday.
And they were fabulous. It was a great show.
I bet they were, yeah. I was here.
It was a full house, and they were giving away free drinks at the bar, I think.
Too bad you guys missed it.
Yeah.
No, Anton's a great guy to work with, too, and we haven't had to rehearse with him at all. Yeah. He just picks up the sax. He just needs to know what key we're in, and away he goes. And it's a fun night, too.
Well,
it's a different flavor of us, really, with sax instead of violin.
Nice, nice. We're going to have some links to your website, the Facebook pages, all that.
Okay. Thanks.
What's coming up for you guys? Another disc in the makes, or just live shows, or is it
really
a play-by-ear?
I've been thinking of doing a solo CD just because it would be there might be some acoustic kind of stuff, and it would allow me to bring in my wife. Jane is such a fabulous singer herself. I could put her in on some more vocals. She sang on this record on a few songs. Oh, and by the way, we had Gary Regina on sax for 2 songs. And I don't know if you ever heard him when he was here. He moved to Sacramento a few months ago, but his last gig in town was the session for Spell Yourself, the second track on the record. And everybody keeps telling me that's the hit on the record, Spell Yourself. And it kind of sounds like it to me, but you'd have thought David Sanborn was in that studio that night. It's just incredible sax play. And Claude Lopez played bass. That's the 4 guests we had was Gary Regina, Anton Teschner, Jane Cheek, and Claude Lopez. I hope that's all of them.
we'll have a link to the site and to the spot to order a disc and
they can get they can download this at iTunes or at Amazon Digital, and they can order the CD at CD Baby also.
Good deal.
Or just email me.
So you got to get it. You got to come to a live show, buy the CD.
That's
then,
the best thing, because
and then you can get it signed by the band
last night.
We can
sign. We'll all 5 sign it for you.
Yeah. No, it was good. Anything you want to? Anything that we didn't hit that you'd like to?
No, man, you covered it great.
Good deal.
Our schedule, we do keep the calendar on the website up to date. That's the best place to find where we're going to be.
Gotcha.
And we're booked all the way into July and August now. We're booking up all that stuff. And I think we'd like to get find some festivals or some bigger venues to play, just to play, get our music out to more people, play for a bigger audience, and we may be working on that in the next couple months.
Well, we'll be looking for it and sharing links when they pop up.
All right.
Well, that was it. That was my talk with Don Cheek of the Cheek Tones. We're going to close out the show with a little music off of their CD, A Second Chance and a First Impression. And I again want to thank Michael and Rachel over at Brick and Bones Moonshine Bar for letting me take up space. And and sit and talk with Don and the other folks that we've sat and talked with at Brick and Bones. And you could hear Gary in the background warming up on those drums. And we are in for a great night of live music with the Cheek Tones. And check them out when you can. Up and down Prescott's Whiskey Row. Thanks for tuning in.
Destiny. She was young and smooth, but her mind was kind of wrinkled. She got heavy when I tried to keep it light. I got a second chance at a first impression, and that sunny day, it felt just like the night. My love, she said, only goes as far as breakfast. Her words were ice, but I was melting fast. She opened up her smile, oh, but she closed off all the options. Now I was looking forward to the past. The morning sun drew her likeness on my curtain. She sighed as we agreed to disagree. It's been a hard night. I need a soft landing. These opposites are killing me. Ooh, they'll tell you opposites attract. Ooh, could be a blessing or a curse. Try to see it all in white or black. Ooh, you try to get ahead, then you got to throw it in reverse.
Southern Cross
up in northern Arizona. Now I know that nothing ever comes for free. It's been a hard life. I need a soft landing. These opposites are killing me. These opposites will be the death of me. Yeah. These opposites are killing me.